Let's go to Pat Buchanan, one of our absolute favorites, political commentator, best-selling author, former U.S. presidential candidate. Pat, great to have you with us.
Good to talk to you, Laura.
War drums. You got old McCain. They're happy. They're thrilled. Oh, my gosh. I've never seen them more giddy than since the last time we committed like 50,000 troops to the Middle East.
Well, it's McCain and Graham and Marco Rubio, the war party. But let me say this, Laura. My view is they're not going to get the war they want if Donald Trump, the president, takes us into serious civil war, and he's already made a first strike. It will consume his presidency. In the sense I get this morning, and listening to some of these folks on yesterday's show, is that don't worry, this is just a one-off. We're not going into Syria. The enemy is still ISIS, as indeed it is. If you take a look at what happened in Egypt yesterday, 47 dead Christians.
We're going to talk about that in a moment.
And 100 injured. So I think that the war party is going to be frustrated because I cannot believe that Donald Trump, on second thought, is going to plunge us into Syria, which he told us again and again and again would be an act of folly, that our enemy is ISIS and our enemy is Al-Qaeda, and we should finish them off, and then we're necessarily going to have to work with the folks who did most of the heavy lifting in finishing them off.
Pat, the carnage in Egypt is heartbreaking. I mean, it's... Look, the images from last week were heartbreaking.
Let me say this. The Christians are really, our Christian friends are being martyred all across the Middle East, from Afghanistan to Iraq to Syria to Egypt. And I don't know when it's going to end, because you've had a revival, at least in that part of the world, of an extreme form of Islam. And they are determined to get all the Christians out. This is part of a global jihad, and they're the most vulnerable and the nearest to them. And these atrocities, I think, are going to continue. I mean, look at the problems it's given General Sisi already.
In 2013, scant attention paid to the hardships endured by the 7.5 million Christians in the Middle East. Klaus Wiewel was this writer, traveled to Iraq, Lebanon, Egypt, Palestinian territories. He found an oppressed minority constantly under the threat of death and humiliation, increasingly desperate in the rising face of Islamic extremism, and without hope that their situation will improve or that anyone will ever come to their aid. He spoke with priests whose churches were burned, citizens who feel like strangers in their own countries and entire communities, whose only hope for survival may be fleeing into exile. These are territories where Jesus walked, where his apostles walked, where the ancient ruins of Christianity remain, where, as we saw in Mosul 2 years ago, the first time since Christ a mass hadn't been said on Christmas Eve in Mosul. And again, very little said by the Obama administration, and very little said, frankly, now by the Trump administration.
Well, the truth is that I hold no brief for the dictators Assad, or certainly not Saddam Hussein. They at least protected the Christian minorities in their communities. They did their best to protect them, and it's when they were overthrown in these forces, these malevolent forces of radical Islam and Islamist fundamentalism and extremism, which really is hell-bent on purging all the lands that Muhammad and his successors conquered of all Christians, and then they're coming to the Christian West and embedding themselves here. But this is really a civilization and a religious war. And not all Muslims are party to it, but huge numbers are, and you don't need that many to massacre and murder Christians and, in effect, drive the other Christians out for fear of their lives. They're an unarmed, tiny minority in a vast Islamic sea, Laura, and I think the fate of a lot of them is going to be martyrdom.
You're listening to The Laura Ingraham Show, 855-40-LAURA. I want to talk about what is happening, or looks like it's happening, inside the West Wing. Maybe we see our own version of
Been
martyrdom.
There, done that.
Another martyrdom. Oh God!
I was in the West Wing. I wasn't in the West Wing. I was in the White House. of Haldeman and Ehrlichman and all the rest of them. I have a new book coming out, which incidentally...
Oh, good.
The White House Wars, the first chapter, which describes how many things took place very similar to what are happening now. Dick Allen, who had been our chief of foreign policy, when Kissinger came in, Dick Allen, who was a good friend of mine, foreign policy research guy, was sent across to the EOB to study long-range planning, and Bob Ellsworth, who had been in the campaign, was sent off to NATO. So this is not unusual, what you're seeing, but I do think there's a this is far more opening and far more in the press than we were in those days.
Well, and I think today, just because Trump came in with, you know, not a clear, well, he had an ideological viewpoint that was more nationalist, populist, for sure.
Yeah, that was the decisive element, nationalism and populism,
right,
and America first, and stay out of these foreign wars, and try to get along with some of these great hostile powers or oppositional powers, rather than going to war with them and build up our own country. I mean, we'd already had about 50 years of Cold War. And that was what he ran on, that was what he won on. But the folks now who seem to be in the ascendancy, I think they have learned nothing and forgotten nothing since George W. Bush launched his rockets.
Yeah, there's just a number.
We're going to end tyranny in our world.
Pat, there's just a number of these people like Graham McCain Rubio, Cory Gardner. They are not happy. Unless America is on the verge of sending like 50,000 troops to the Middle East. I mean, they're itching for war with Russia. I've never seen anything like this.
I saw McCain after the cruise missiles went. He had us in eastern Ukraine and everything else.
Christmas
morning. Oh, we're going to do this. We're going to take care of him. And then he goes out. We're going to take care of him. And all of this. And I just couldn't believe what I was hearing. But again, I will say, watching TV and reading the papers in the morning and reading into it, I get the sense that Trump and the people around him realize that, look, you get the word, this is a one-off, we're not going to overthrow Assad, that is not our objective. Because I'll tell you this, and I'm writing on it today, if you try to overthrow Assad, then you will be at war, the Russians will fight, the Iranians will fight, Hezbollah will fight, obviously Assad and his army and air force will fight, we'll be fighting all four of them, as well as ISIS and Al-Qaeda in Syria. Now, you tell me how we win that war and who we put into power after we defeated all six of them.
Well, the Christians in Syria want no part of that. I can tell you, the Assyrian Christians...
They would like to end the war.
Right.
And frankly, they're in better shape under Assad than they are where ISIS or these other people rise to power. I think that Trump, they have to have a second look at this and say, do we really want to start down this road? Because we all know where this ends. And it is obvious where it ends, and that is America inside the Syrian civil war, sending in more and more troops. You can read that. I think Mr. Kagan and some of the others, they're all happy and giddy, and this is where they're headed. And if Trump sees where they're going, and I believe you cannot be blind to seeing where this ends if we keep this up, I think he will pull back.
But, Pat, you're going back to your... your days with Nixon. I mean, you probably the only place I really part ways with you is the way you view China, because you know what we see today with China is a extremely canny and clever power that wants to be a hegemon in its own hemisphere, South China Sea. If they could take Taiwan, they're going to take Taiwan. If they can be in charge of the entire Korean Peninsula, they want to take charge of that. And they've obviously cheated us. They've manipulated their currency. They've subsidized their corporations. We've lost millions of jobs, in part because of our own bad policy, but in part because they're just, you know, they're not operating efficiently or fairly in the so-called international marketplace. So when you look at Xi's visit to the United States, how do you see that? Do you see there's this real opportunity for American, you know, Chinese new era of global cooperation, or do you see it a little bit more differently now that time has passed since the days of Nixon's trip to China?
I hate to be hawking my book before it's even out, but I have a chapter in there on the China trip and where I was really in Henry's face over the Taiwan, the China communique, which was appalling. I agree with you, basically. I've argued in the 90s that I did not think it was wise. I opposed MFN for China every single year. I opposed them coming into the World Trade Organization.
Horrible.
And the reason I did it is they're going to grow into a great power. And as they do, they're slowly. They think in terms of decades and centuries. Their objective is to push the United States out of the seas off the coast of China and then back across to our side of the Pacific and to be basically be a hegemonic power over all those states, peripheral states around the China coast from the Yellow Sea to the East China Sea and South China Sea, and to become the greatest power in the world. I don't think they want a war with the United States, but they're a very tough power, and they know what they want, and they're moving toward it. And I think the trouble with the Americans, we believe, you know, hey, it's going to be a great, world free trade, Adam Smith, and all the rest of it, you know.
Well, yeah.
They've been reading too many of those Manchester School books.
Yeah. Pat, I love the fact that you have all these wealthy Chinese that are coming over and getting citizenship and residency on that very, it's arcane visa that if you invest a certain number of money or certain types of investments.
You bring $500,000 in and you're in.
Yeah.
American.
That's what all of our framers understood American citizenship to be all about.
Yeah,
just
exactly
buy your way
it.
In.
It wasn't carrying a musket up at Lexington or Concord. Buy your way into the USA.
So, Pat, with Bannon versus Kushner and this Gary Cohn, who's a New York Democrat, liberal, Goldman Sachs, I mean, I've known Steve Bannon for a long time. I mean, but I say this, if you're going to go up against a guy who became president of Goldman Sachs, he didn't become president of Goldman Sachs because he's an idiot. He's really smart. He's really smart. So you can't screw up.
There's bodies in the basement.
Yeah, a lot of them down there, Wall Street. But you got to be super, super prepared with your first initiatives and all that. And what advice would you give old Bannon today?
Well, I think if the truth is, there's no doubt that Donald Trump is, of course, enormously supportive of his daughter. And I think he's enormously supportive and protective of his son-in-law. That's a fight you cannot win. But I will say this. If they succeed in getting Mr. Bannon and Mr. Bannon has to leave, the shield will be removed from Jared Kushner. And the populists and nationalists out there who feel that their voice, they did a tremendous amount to put Donald Trump in power. And frankly, if Donald Trump marches us into Syria, he will begin to lose these folks. Their main issues are trade,
yep,
and immigration and America first. But if he, those aren't the views of Mr. Cohn of Goldman Sachs. And if that becomes the adopted policy of the Trump White House, it won't be too long before those people will depart.
Devouring their own. Well, the pitchforks, Pat. We got to get your pitchfork back. We're gonna have to go right into the closet and get that pitchfork, Pat Buchanan. I can't wait till your book comes out. Great to have you on. Thanks so much.
The Laura Ingraham Show.